We're excited to announce that our very own podcasting platform, Zencastr, has become a new sponsor to the show. Check out the podcast discount link in our show notes and stay tuned for why we love using Zen for the podcast.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Archaeology Show. TAS goes behind the headlines to bring you the real stories about archaeology and the history around us. Welcome to the podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 78, a bonus episode. This is the live recording of You Call This Archaeology with me, Chris Webster, and Richie Cruz from HappyArchaeologyFunTime.com. Today we ramble on about a lot of things, including your career in archaeology. All right.
Yeah.
Well.
Oh, interesting. You're a lot louder than I am.
Am I? Well, welcome to You Call This Archaeology.
Yeah.
I need to make sure we're, I get some audio here.
Woo.
Yay. How's everybody doing? I see 12 people watching.
Wait, seriously?
So yeah, send us a comment. Let us know you're in.
Wow.
I'd like to see, Really? Chuck Hutchison's in there. I always want to put an N in your name, Chuck. I don't know why. But yeah, send us in your comments or anything like that. We haven't really started yet, but you know, send them in anyway. Like, give us a share. And basically what this show is, for anybody who's joining for the first time, because I shared to a bunch of groups just now, we are really, we are looking for, we're just talking about anything in archaeology.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
Or sometimes things that are not in archaeology.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Like the fact that it's a really weird winter.
Yeah.
So far. Yeah. Yesterday it felt like I was back in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
That and the fact that Windows kept reminding me that Windows 7 is ending, support for it is ending. So I uploaded. So it was a really easy process on
Wait, you're still on Windows 7?
For two of my computers I was. Whoops.
Oh, wow.
But thing is, on my laptop, the one I use as my backup desktop.
Yeah, yeah.
It was super easy. I just downloaded it because they say that support for it has ended, that the free version has ended and that you have to pay for it, but that's a lie.
Sure.
So I did it anyway and it worked and it was super easy. But for there's something wrong with my desktop. I suspect the BIOS might be a little old because I'm up to the newest version.
Sure.
And it would get to the point where it would download, it would do its first startup and said, oh, undoing all the changes, getting rid of all the changes and putting everything back. And I did that for 5 hours.
Yeah.
Because it was an hour each time.
Yeah.
It's that's not going to happen.
Right, right.
Which led me down the rabbit hole. And now I'm like, God damn it. Everything's become so much cheaper. SSDs have become cheaper. So it's just I was looking, I've got a 200 gig SSD right now.
Mm-hmm.
Or 256. And that was a lot of money when I bought it.
Yeah.
And now 500 gig SSD is $60. And I'm if I'm going to bring it in to have the new clean install of Windows 10, should I go with a bigger hard drive?
Right, right.
And then if I'm going to go with a bigger hard drive, should I go with an internal Wi-Fi / Bluetooth card, which is $30?
Yeah.
And I'm like, God damn it. Should I or shouldn't I?
Well, I don't know what to tell you.
Because I feel like I am anyway.
Yeah. Hey, real quick. I'm having an issue on my side.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, I can see everybody on my phone here, and I see that we're live, but on my streaming side, on the Facebook page for streaming side, I still see the standby screen, and I'm not really sure why.
Wait, really?
Yeah, I think the comments are probably live, but I'm going to keep my phone. That's why I keep looking at it here.
Oh.
I'm going to keep this up and just to make sure that the stream is still good and that so I can see any comments that come through.
Oh, my God. Speaking of your phone, have you seen the iPhone 11 video, iPhone 11 Pro video that was shot by the director of John Wick?
No, I haven't. Looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we'll do that too, but obviously had all the extras that,
right.
A stunt coordinator and and a giant crew.
Sure.
But still, it's amazing what you can do with them these days.
I can imagine. Yeah.
The only problem I've been having is audio.
Yeah.
At least there's some quirk in my phone where It resets itself to go back to internal audio every time I like end the clip and start it up again.
Oh, you got to reset it? Yeah.
Oh, and it's interesting. This is a brand new case because I was at coffee. I was heading to coffee bar last Monday and I left and then suddenly the audio cut out like, oh, I dropped it. So I walked straight back to coffee bar thinking I left it on the counter. But it turns out I had dropped it on the road.
Oh,
yeah. And a car ran over it.
Oh, my God. And your phone was okay?
Yeah, completely fine.
Wow.
And, you know, the only thing that was wrong was that the screen was cracked. Not this, you know, the phone screen, but
the case screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I just bought a new one. I'm like, wow, that's cool. You could even see on the old screen, where, you know, the car dragged a little.
Jeez. Nice.
So if you ever want to ever doubt the power of OtterBox.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Ugh. Well, so, hey, let's bring in a few topics here.
Yeah.
So I know one thing we were talking about before the recording is RPA again. We talked about it last time, but now there's been a lot more response and reaction to the Register of Professional Archaeologists announcing that they have a new RA phase. But the biggest thing, I guess we're not going to rehash all that, but the biggest thing is people thinking that this professional organization that we have is actually a scam and it doesn't do anything.
See?
Yeah. So, I mean, they do stuff. Most of what they do is legal action against with people basically, that's where most of their fees go to from what I've been told. We've interviewed people from the RPA before, past presidents of the RPA on the Sierra Mark podcast. And one of the things they said that the money goes to is basically either legal defense of RPAs or legal prosecution of people saying they're RPAs and they're not. Basically, because that's
interesting.
Yeah, because that's what that's for. I mean, if you're not in the RPA, you can't call yourself an RPA, and they really watch for that.
Interesting.
But you might ask, well, what the heck is all that for? Like who cares? You know. But it really comes down to, as I mentioned, probably last time on this show, and definitely on the Sierra Archaeology podcast, is basically the RPA is as important as we want it to be.
Yeah,
it's as impactful in our careers and our lives as we want it to be.
Yeah.
You know, if we don't give it any value, then it's simply not going to have any value, which is a conversation we need to have.
Well, it's like that union that they came up with in the 90s. Like, obviously it died because people wouldn't participate.
Yeah. Everything, as we know, takes participation.
Yeah.
You know, I was just looking at my Civil Air Patrol squadron. I've got 94 people in the squadron, and I'm willing to bet, if I had to really look at it, 30, 35 people probably are really active.
Really?
And then another 10 on top of that are semi-active. And then the rest of them, probably half the people in the squadron, are just not active at all. They pay their dues every year, but they never come to anything. They never do anything, which is fine with me. We got plenty of people that can do everything we need to do. But
plus, do you have enough room for 90 people at a meeting?
Well, exactly. If we had 90 people show up to a meeting, I wouldn't know what to do with them, which is a weird problem, right? Like, we keep accepting people, but... Like, I, you know, if they actually all showed up, we'd kind of be in trouble. But that's the thing with, it's the opposite problem with a field tech or, you know, with a professional organization in archaeology. If everybody showed up, that would be a good thing to have as a problem, right?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's like people put more stock into that, what was it, March for Science than they do in the RPA.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and a lot of stuff has a lot more sexy visibility, you know?
Yeah.
I think RPA has been around long enough that we all just kind of know about it, but nobody really knows about it. But something new comes around called March for Science, and it's hard not to get behind that.
Also one thing that was brought up, even, you know, the SOI. Like, you know, it's like I've never needed it in the Great Basin.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's like a necessity if you want to be like, you know, I don't know at what level that would even be a necessity in the Great Basin, yet people are always like, SOI, SOI. It's just like...
Yeah. Well, and that's for people that don't know, Secretary of Interior Standards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you see that listed on like jobs for like, you know, where the company originates in the East. I feel like more of an East thing. Am I wrong?
No, not necessarily. I mean, people default to a set of standards. And the only standards that we have that are really published and written are the Secretary of Interior standards for basically a government archaeologist, you know, which is what that means. So if people don't want to write their own standards, they say must meet, you know, SOI qualifications. But really, you look at the BLM in Nevada, I mean, that really kind of just falls in line with SOI. They just modified it a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, they just don't call it that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, that's what they're looking for the DOE?
I mean, possibly. I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I mean, for people who don't know what that is, it's like, you know, a thing you fill out here in the West, you know, in the Great Basin to prove you can be a crew chief.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
Yeah. So, so you're right. That is basically what it's based on.
Yeah.
Like I said, they added some features to it that include what is your experience in these different regions, because they're very concerned with what your experiences is, obviously in those
regions.
And
can you operate, are you qualified for historics or prehistorics?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Interesting. So that is what the SOI is.
I mean, basically, yeah.
Interesting. Because I always put the fact that I'm qualified to be a crew chief in the Great Basin for prehistorics and historics on my resume, which I was updating last night.
Yeah.
My God. Word is like, oh my God, Word? I hate you. Well, I should say I hate 365 because obviously the whole point I thought of 365 was that I could operate as that I could work on a document on any computer I wanted, right?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm not, but every time I tried to open it on this computer and on my desktop, it said locked, and I'm like, I never locked it. And, it would take a few times of, closing and opening it, closing and opening it, and rebooting the computer. And finally, it would let me, because it kept saying, this document, this selection is locked. You cannot make any, changes to it. And I'm like, I never specified that anywhere.
Right.
Anyway, and then it said, make a copy. And then, make a copy to integrate. But it doesn't show you how to integrate the two documents once you're done.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, my God, you suck. I hate you.
It sounds like, Richie, you should have listened to the entire Archaeotech episode on word processing.
I did.
Oh, you poor soul. There you go. I know we mentioned that last time, too.
Yeah.
So.
God, I forget. Oh, my God. I was watching a vintage tech YouTube channel where they were talking about he brought up WordPerfect and a few other ones.
Yeah.
In relation to because he had them on a floppy disk and was just putting them in.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Oh, my God. I was just listening. I don't know if this is about to go slightly off the rails, but.
This is, you call this archaeology.
Have you, when was the last time you watched the original Mission Impossible?
You mean the TV series?
No,
Tom Cruise, the first movie.
Yeah.
Actually, probably this year sometime. I love those movies.
Oh, the original first one?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you get a kick out of the fact that, the whole floppy disk swapping thing at the end?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like, because I was listening to a podcast or listening to that. It's like, wow, the whole world hinges on them getting Wi-Fi in this train.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty funny when you look at older movies and the tech that they have in there.
I mean, that movie's 99 was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know.
2014's a long time ago.
I know.
And the only reason I think of 2014 is because I was at chapel Friday, and I was asking them, what's
that
thing?
And that doesn't mean church,
no.
For those of you dialing in from outside of Reno.
It's a bar. And they have one of those absinthe towers, and I was asking them about it. Mm-hmm. And then the person next to me was like, oh, I want to try one. And so he brought it down. And she was telling me that the last time she had an absinthe was 2014.
Mm.
And then I was trying to think of the speakeasy bar in San Francisco that gives you an absinthe cocktail as a on the house when you walk in.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I forget what it is.
I'm not sure if I've ever had absinthe, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't tried it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, there's plenty of bars.
Yeah, I know. I just need to get there and do it. I just never did it. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It sounds like I would like it based on what I've heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So are you decorating for the holidays, out of curiosity?
Am I what?
Decorating for the holidays?
Yeah. We have a tree. We just haven't put it up yet. It's a fake tree.
Oh, interesting. Because I've been looking for, an eco-friendly tree that isn't, I don't know.
I like the one that we got, I think, last year, the year before. It was, it's got lights built into it.
Ah.
And it's just, because I grew up with real trees.
Yeah.
But it's such a pain in the ass. And I just saw an article about how there's fewer real trees being grown and more people that wanted to buy them. Now, a lot of people around here will get a Forest Service permit and go out and cut their own. But I don't think that's sustainable either. Why are we doing that? It's just not, it's fun to go out and do, don't get me wrong, but it's not sustainable.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's interesting because I just walked by a real tree coming in here.
Yeah?
Yeah. No.
Oh, right out in the lobby. Yeah. 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 And they haven't decorated it yet.
Is there some kind of secret Santa here or something?
No, they just decorate for Christmas.
Interesting.
Yeah. Usually it's before now they have done it, but they're getting a little late on the action. We actually have kind of a holiday party here at the Reno Collective next week.
Yeah.
They call it the cookie swap. People bring in cookies and you just have cookies.
Wow.
And they vote on which the best one is. So
I probably shouldn't mention this. I should probably mention it off the air, but I was thinking, wow, did some homeless person abandon a truck out back?
Yes. Yes. No, actually, it's a member that owns that. It's a Burning Man truck. So,
wow.
Anyway,
wait, really?
Yeah, yeah. let's bring this back to archaeology.
I know.
well, actually, we've got a listener from the UK.
Yeah.
Kara Simmons, Simons. Sorry, Kara.
Yeah.
There's a thing over here in the UK where you can hire your Christmas tree. Do you mean rent? That means rent in the UK. You can rent a Christmas tree.
Ah.
Now, that can't be a live tree, I would assume. That would be a fake tree.
Maybe.
I don't know. Kara, is that a live tree or a fake tree? I'm curious, because if it's a live tree, maybe it comes in like a planter and then they'll like replant it for you or something.
Oh my God.
That'd
idea,
be cool.
An idea just popped in my mind.
Mm.
Blue Apron, except for Christmas trees and decorations.
I mean, the company would only be sustainable if you used it all year long.
You know? Damn.
Yeah. Yeah. And this other Amy Walpert says in California, maybe here's helps clear fuels from the forest. And Kara says, no, it's a live Christmas tree.
Interesting.
So that's a pretty interesting idea. Yeah.
Oh my God. That actually reminds me. It's I'm also part of a group on Facebook. Oh God, was it like Native Plants of California or something like that?
Oh yeah. I'm on that group.
And
yeah.
One of the threads was someone talking about how the fuel reduction strategy used by current foresters and the Forest Service is inane. And it was interesting because, you know, there was one of the responses was by an actual Forest Service forester, and he and the original poster were having a very like intelligent conversation back and forth, talking about various strategies and citing their sources. And then you scroll down a little and you like read some responses from people who literally just like Google stuff and just like post articles, basically the usual sort of, you know. Almost like what you expect to see in like a political forum, like, you know, whatever. It's just like you can so totally tell when someone actually knows what they're talking about versus what. It's just like, oh my God. And as someone like, you know, as someone who has been working on a forest, you know, on a reduction, was working on a reduction project, I can say that it's just very strange the way they carry it out, in my personal opinion.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how to say it other than that without saying too much.
Sure, sure.
You know, I mean, obviously some trees need to come down. Like, they need to come down like they're actually on the power line, like they're, like, sitting on it. But other trees, you're like, really?
Right.
Like, there was actually one tree in the very last day of my project I was out there where the listers, you know, they had, it's a long story, but they had one listing company I went through, but they did such a bad job that they either were fired or quit, and so they brought in a much better company, and they went and delisted a whole bunch of trees, including one where we were looking at it. It's like a really nice looking healthy tree, and they wanted to bring it down, and the Forest Service approved of it being brought down. We're like, that's a really nice tree.
Yeah.
Like, there was nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
You know, just whatever.
Yeah. Must be some reason for it, or it's all political. Who knows?
That too. Also, people take terrible photos of trees.
I bet. But it's hard to get a good photo of a big tree.
Well, it is, but you can at least like take enough of the background so that you can say, well, the person took it here.
Yeah.
That way you know what you're looking at.
Yeah.
But, you know, they would just like go right up the tree and take a photo of it, which is useless.
Right.
Not that I had that. I had nothing.
Yeah. Hey, Corbin Dixon joined. Do you remember Corbin?
Of course I do.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't seen Corbin in a long time.
Ooh.
Chuck here says sometimes trees are removed because of species encroachment, like pinyon or juniper on the forest that he works on.
Yeah, that happens all the time. Yeah. Like, you know, like when I was in Idaho, they were doing a whole bunch of, juniper thinning.
Because,
you know, of global warming, it's all starting to slide down slope.
Right.
But I'm like talking about like, you know, it's clearly like, I feel like some of those people who don't know a lot about trees, and I'm trying to make conversation about it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that wasn't my point. My point was that, you know, you can totally tell people just want to make themselves experts when they're not.
Yes.
Like Alex Jones.
Indeed. Indeed. So, all right. Well, I am recording this, just so everybody knows, if you want to hear this again or send it to your friends or something like that, obviously you can share this Facebook post once it goes live on Facebook. But I'm also recording this for the Archaeology Show, so we're going to put it out on that. So welcome to the Archaeology Show listeners.
Yeah.
And just for that recording, we're going to take a break right now, and we'll come back on the other side. Chris Webster here for the Archaeology Podcast Network. We strive for high-quality interviews and content so you can find information on any topic in archaeology from around the world. One way we do that is by recording recording interviews with our hosts and guests located in many parts of the world all at once. We do that through the use of Zencastr. That's Z-E-N-C-A-S-T-R. Zencastr allows us to record high-quality audio with no stress on the guest. Just send them a link to click on, and that's it. Zencastr does the rest. They even do automatic transcriptions. Check out the link in the show notes for 30% off your first 3 months, or go to Zencastr.com and use the code TAS. Looking to expand your knowledge of x-rays and imaging in the archaeology field? Then check out An Introduction to Paleoradiography, a short online course offering professional training for archaeologists and affiliated disciplines. Created by archaeologist, radiographer, and lecturer James Elliott, the content of this course is based upon his research and teaching experience in higher education. It is approved by the Chartered Institute for Archaeologists as 4 hours of training. That's in the UK, for those of you that don't know. So don't miss out on this exciting opportunity for professional and personal development. For more information on price and course structure, visit paleoimaging.com. That's P-A-L-E-O imaging.com. And look for the link in the show notes to this episode. And we're back on the other side. So there you go. The magic of editing and cutting.
Interesting. Why are there two cables in that one?
Well, because this one's broken. It's built into the system.
Oh.
It just hasn't been cut out yet.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so that's what you deal with. Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about, I think we mentioned last time, I don't know if I actually mentioned it out loud, but I did send in my deposit for the Cybertruck from Tesla, which I think would make a fantastic field vehicle.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have a lot of room in the back, to be honest, but we don't often have to carry a ton of stuff anyway, just like field bags and shovels and screens maybe.
True.
You know?
Well, for me, it's mostly about keeping out bugs, like, you know. Like, if you've ever, like, used an SUV out east or in the southeast, and suddenly, like, all the ticks start climbing out of there, like, after the end of the day, and suddenly you're like, ugh.
Yeah. Well, I think with its durability and its, you know, the sides and stuff like that, it's not going to get scratched up as much.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Yeah. Have you been watching any of the videos? Because obviously there's a lot of videos discussing the pros and minuses, but not a lot of videos about the engineering behind it and why they have built it the way they have, because a lot of people think it looks ugly. Why'd you style it like this?
Sure.
And from what I understand, they did it so that they didn't have to invest in any new machinery. They could just build it.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally just stamped out and then the back is scored, and that's why there's all those flat plane angles, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And I'm all about practical these days.
Yeah.
You know, I want stuff that's functional and practical, from gear to my vehicle. You know what I mean? I don't need to look flashy.
Well, I mean, think about, you know, you've obviously worked on mines a lot.
Yeah.
Think about all those trucks that they park right next to the security gate, and then they drive them like 2 miles.
Yeah.
And then they come back and it's like sitting there for a week.
Right.
That'd be like the perfect use case. It's like always charged up, and like a mine is like, what, 2 miles long?
Yeah, yeah.
So no one really cares.
I know.
Ooh.
So.
Oh, plus you wouldn't need, you wouldn't ever have to lose a key again.
Right.
Unless you lost your phone, but, you know, or something.
We're never going to forget that key, are we? Never going to forget it.
It's also interesting. I wonder, Teslas, they must give you something for your wallet. So that way you don't need your phone.
Oh, I'm sure there's a way to not have a key for that thing. Or your phone, for that matter. I mean, watch, whatever.
Yeah. Well,
but you always have your phone on you, so.
Yeah.
You know.
Ooh.
Yeah. Hey, let's bring something up too. Just because I want to talk about this, just to see if anybody has any responses to this, because there's 12 people watching right now.
Really? Wait, how many people are watching?
So we just recorded an episode of the CRM Archaeology podcast before this, which will be out on December 18th. So if you're watching this live, you can hear our discussion about this then. But we were answering a few listener questions, and one of them was about a career in archaeology and what does that look like.
Oh, was that the one that was sent by Tristan?
Yeah, you saw that in our Slack team. No, actually, that was a Twitter comment. We had another email that was sent outside of that. Yeah. Sorry, we discussed that too, though.
Yeah.
But so we saw one of the questions was basically they were trying to figure out what a career in archaeology looks like, and that led to an entire discussion that took us like 25 minutes to have. And but one of the things I wanted to mention was that I get probably an email or Facebook message or Twitter message a week, if not more sometimes.
Yeah.
And especially this time of year, it really ramps up with people saying, hey, I want to start my own business in archaeology. What's some advice you can give me? And the first thing I tell them is, well, do you really want to start a business in archaeology? Because it's not the answer to all your problems.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the panacea that you might think it is. And as an example, you know, Richie and I were talking about this before the recording, but, And I've talked about this on various podcasts before, but I was part of a really big, they call it an IDIQ, indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contract, basically. Which is through the Navy, and it's basically 5 years long. And there's like, I think there's usually five companies that are hired that, that win the contract. And then based on how you filled out the tables and stuff like that for what your prices were, the Navy basically just says, hey, we have this survey and we're giving it to you. And this is what we're going to pay you for it, whether you like it or not. So my company, DigTech, was on this 5 years ago, and Richie was on one of these big projects. And I'll tell you what, it was one of the most nerve-wracking things I've ever done, is managing the budgets and people for a 15,000-acre project, and then right leading on to that, a 30,000-acre project.
I remember that.
Yeah, and it was difficult. I mean, it wasn't impossible, but it was difficult. And I learned a lot. And there's a lot of things I will do differently, because I, my company is now part of another prime that won this contract again. We're in the next five-year period. So I'm on it again. And I don't know if I'm going to get anything. We might get nothing. I have no idea. I literally just found out as we're recording this a couple days ago. So, well, yesterday. And
right before you went to work out.
Yeah, basically. Right as I was working out. Almost, so anyway, it was... I'm just saying this because, you know, how many other people are either running a business or thinking about running a business? Because there are some things that I didn't think about on that project last time, like payroll taxes. I didn't realize how big those were going to be and how much that was going to eat into my budget. And little stuff that we did. I would never take away some of the small stuff like Dig. Like, I thought it was really important that the crew eat out together once a 10-day. And I paid for that. And it was usually between... I can't remember what El Centro cost, but at Ridgecrest...
Not a lot.
No, because we had a smaller crew, too. But at Ridgecrest, I had about eight people total, with myself included. And it was between $200 and $300 for a meal for us to eat, because I'd usually get appetizers, a few bottles of wine, drinks, whatever they wanted. You know, I mean, we would have a good meal. It's not like we went to McDonald's. But I think those kinds of things are important. Plus the per diem was, well, the per diem was set by the Navy, so I couldn't, I was only $110. I wanted to make it about $150, but I couldn't do that because it was set by the contract. But I could choose what the hourly rate was. So I had a, what I think is a fairly decent hourly rate. It was as much as I could afford.
Oh, by the way, I did get, my God, I actually got a comment for the first time ever.
Very nice. On the YouTube side.
You want to hear it? It's actually a question, by the way. So I wanted to answer this before before this person, I'm not going to say his name on the air. But basically.
Well, it's on YouTube for all to see.
Oh, actually, I didn't think about that either. Well, whatever.
It's not confidential.
Well, anyway, George says, if the first crew chief you worked under as a field tech is giving you bad references to other jobs, is that a sign to just fuck off and not even bother anymore? The guy offered to be a reference.
Wait.
Should I read that again?
Yeah, read that one more time.
All right. If the first crew chief you worked under as a field tech is giving you a bad reference to other jobs, is that a sign to just fuck off and not even bother anymore? The guy offered to be a reference.
So the guy that's already giving him bad references wants to be a reference for him. That doesn't make any sense. I would say that's pretty common in archaeology. There's a lot of bitterness and competition, and...
That's why I choose carefully.
Well, and I don't know. I don't know, George. There's one of two possibilities here. George is a great employee and was threatening to that other guy from a career standpoint. And maybe the guy's trying to tank him, right?
We're familiar with that.
Or B, let's be honest, George. Maybe you weren't that great of an employee on your first go round. Maybe you've got some things to learn. I'll use my own self as an example. I was a terrible person to be around my first couple projects in archaeology, probably my first few years. Well, I came from the Navy. I came from some other experiences. I didn't come right out of college. And I had some, I had a lot of leadership training. I had a lot of, you know, management training, things like that. And I came into a field where we don't really get that kind of training. So I wasn't probably the nicest person to my crew chiefs and my field supervisors. And I realize that now. You know, and looking back on that, I mean, I had some people that I worked for in my first few years in archaeology that, to be honest, probably wouldn't have given me that good of a reference. But that's just something I had to learn on my own.
Interesting.
And then you're going to meet people also that just rub you the wrong way, or you rub them the wrong way. And there's nothing you can do about that. It's just personality conflicts. So, you know, there's... I don't know anything about this situation, but obviously don't use that person as a reference. Try to find somebody else within the project, or go back to a college reference or something like that.
Like, you know, like if you went to field school, I still list my field school, you know, the lead of my field school. Just as Actually, more out of sentimentality than anything else. I bet. Right. I'm not even sure it's the right phone number anymore.
Well, and while we're talking about references, I do this in my jobs webinar, but it's basically,
yeah.
Don't forget, even if you've got an old reference, make sure just about every start of every field season, you contact that old reference and say, hey, is it still okay for me to be a reference? Because sometimes, even if you're still on good terms with them, like, for example, I'm a reference on your references, but here's the thing. Some companies have a very formatted list of questions that they ask. And if they call and say, hey, when was the last time Richie worked for you?
I know.
And if I say 5 years ago, then how good is that reference going to be?
Awesome.
Well, I know. I mean, it's your choice. You can still leave it on there, but the company that's calling may not consider that a valid reference if it's too far back.
I know. That's why I'm trying to update my references right now, but it's harder than I thought.
Yeah.
Because so many people I know have left the business.
Right.
You know. Like some of them, like within the past couple of months. And I was like, God damn it.
Yeah.
You know, and other people just like, they're just done. They're tired. They'd rather drive Uber.
Right. Well, and you can always put other references on there for specific things. And maybe there's no reason you can't put some text below your reference that you're turning in and say, hey, this wasn't an archaeology job, but, you know, I did these tasks for this person. And I think those translate to an archaeological career.
You know, now that we're talking about resumes, are you the sort of person who thinks it should all fit on the one page? Or that two pages is all right, or
well,
more.
By definition, I think a resume should be one page, and a CV is as many pages as you want it to be.
See, that's the problem. Like, I can't do that unless, like, my font is, like, five.
No, see, that's where you're wrong. Oh. A resume is an extract of your CV.
Ah.
A resume is your contact information, a couple of jobs that fit what the employer is looking for, your education because they need that, your field school because they need that, and that's basically it.
Yeah.
I mean, you shouldn't have everything on there. Now, your CV, my CV is 8 pages long.
Ah.
Yeah, but the front page of my CV is almost like a resume with the exception of the job stuff. I basically have my education, an Same extract here. Of my experience on there, you know, for the BLM permitting and stuff like that.
Thing is, I tried to whittle it down, but some companies, you know, I just can't, like, I don't want to take off, but then I realize it doesn't quite all fit.
You shouldn't have to whittle down your CV.
No, my resume.
Your resume. And who actually asks for a resume anymore? But, you know, I mean, most people ask for a CV.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, I've never turned in a resume for an archaeology job.
Interesting, because I've never turned in a CV.
Oh, well, it always says turn in your CV or something like that I've seen.
Interesting.
So, honestly, I don't really know.
Oh, one other thing. What's the minimum font size you'd use?
Oh, 10, 11.
Damn it.
Yeah, you don't want people to strain themselves. I mean,
you know. Interesting. All right, I'm going to have to rework it again.
Yeah.
Hopefully Word works this time, or Office 365.
You need to take some stuff off of there, because you shouldn't have more than 2 to 3 jobs on the front of your resume.
I know.
Again, if they're asking for your full experience, that's a CV.
I know.
Yeah.
Plus, they can look at my LinkedIn if they want to see everything I've ever done.
You can always head over to patreon.com/teamblack.
Oh.
And I'm pretty sure that the jobs webinar that I have up there, which is only about 25 minutes long, which teaches you all these things, I'm pretty sure that's either free or at the lowest level at like $3 a month or something like that.
Oh, and stay tuned to see if it qualifies you for an RA.
Well, it should qualify you for some actual credits, but I don't know about full registered archaeologist standpoint. Yeah, because you need 8 hours a year, you know.
Yeah, but so. Between that and like a conference.
Yeah.
That's actually, now that I'm thinking about it.
A conference should cover it in its entirety.
Well, I was thinking about that. Like, you know, so many field techs and like even, not even just field techs, but crew chiefs, project managers, PIs, they don't even go to this conference. Like if they made, not just for the RA, but if they made like continuing education a contingent upon keeping your RPA behind your, you know, your RPA initials. Like, you know, that would probably boost, you know, attendance at a lot of these conferences.
Probably. But you got to think, too, there's cheaper ways. I mean, just to go to one conference is probably going to cost somebody well over $1,000 when you factor in airfare and hotel. You can get continuing education credits for way less than that.
That's true.
Yeah. But here, real quick on resumes and CVs, two comments that came in almost simultaneously are the complete opposite of each other. Amy says, my last job asked for a resume.
Yeah.
Chuck Hutchison says, I haven't used a resume for 20 years, only a CV.
Really? Interesting. Maybe I ought to start coming. Well, it's not like I really care anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I sort of care, but it's all right.
Yeah. And Heather here says, I've only used a CV also. So
interesting.
Yeah.
So apparently I'm in the minority.
Well, you got to look at the job posting too. You know, if you're handing in a two-page document that and they actually said CV, but you're handing them a resume, and it's not a total, it's not your entire career. Then you know that might be flagged.
Interesting. So,
yeah, but you're always consistently employed, so you're doing something right.
Well, that's true too.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is really the whole point of all this. If you're constantly getting jobs, then you probably don't need to change what you're doing.
Oh, by the way, George is still watching.
Hey, George.
So let's see. So last thing the guy told me after I left the company was to use him as a reference.
Yeah.
I'll admit I had some problems and the people at the company really got to me. Using him was a mistake.
Yes. Hey, I've definitely had that.
Yeah.
I've definitely had that problem.
Same here.
Yeah.
And sometimes people like, you know, sometimes it's the most unexpected people who like, right. Give you bad references or, you know, like sometimes they're very friendly. Like, hey, right. Let's have a drink at a bar. And you're like, all right, I'm not going to say any names.
Right. Real quick, Amy says here, she says Chuck and her went to school together, so they actually know each other. That's cool. And they're doing the opposite things at resume. Well, at least Amy, for one job, they asked for a resume. Anyway, yeah, I was just mentioning on the Sierra Mark podcast recording.
Yeah.
It's funny. I'm going to mention the same story, but in a different context, like you just said. You know, when I think back on this one New Mexico job that my wife and I had.
Yeah.
The company had some issues.
Yeah.
They had some management issues. They had some ownership issues. They had some field leadership issues.
Yeah.
And I did not get along with the field director.
Yeah.
Not even a little bit. And in fact, my wife and I both got food poisoning because we ate somewhere in Grants, New Mexico. I can't remember. I think it was a Panda Express. There weren't too many options. Oh, wait, that wasn't in Grants. We went up through Albuquerque, and I think it was up around there. And then by the time we got home at this place we were staying out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Neither of us were feeling great. We were up all night. I in fact had to drive her in the middle of the night, an hour and a half away to the nearest hospital. And she had to get, like some stomach medication and stuff like that. She was feeling so bad.
Wow.
And I started feeling bad, I think the next day, and I ended up just kind of stupidly pushing through it and working that day and spending a lot of time behind the bushes. And it was not a pleasant experience. And I ended up taking, I think, at least a day off. And this field director was just being a total jerk about it.
Yeah.
And there were some other things and we just didn't get along. But
yeah,
I remember that project fondly because it was 9 on 5 off. And we saw every national park just about in New Mexico.
Ooh.
And a lot of them in eastern Arizona at the same time. And it was just a fantastic location to spend like the spring and summer. But these guys, I never would have used them for a reference.
Yeah.
You know, I just, and in fact, they were moving at the end of what we were working on.
Yeah.
There was probably 15 or 20 of us on this project. And
that's not bad.
It was, yeah. And we were going from a phase three, moving over to this other, I think some survey and some phase two work.
Yeah.
And so basically full scale excavation to testing and survey. And we were the only two that weren't asked to stay on.
although.
Which was mutually beneficial because I didn't want to be there.
Well, sometimes it's also not even your fault or it's not even like malice. Sometimes your PI will just have also coincidentally have a friend named Chris and they're like, you know, they need to get rid of someone.
Chris 2.0 shows up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which actually happened.
That only happens when your PI is a disc golf fan. We'll just leave it at that. So anyway, some people who might give you bad references too, like I didn't even remember the names of some of these people that are back in early in my career. That guy that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Couldn't tell you what his name is.
Ah.
There's a guy who we worked for at the last company that I worked for.
Yeah.
That was here in Reno. That's no longer here anymore. I now just remembered his name. We were up on the road that he used to live on or still lives on yesterday.
Really?
In Northwest Reno. And I was trying to remember, what the hell is his name? Honestly, couldn't remember his name.
Oh.
Yeah. But I've never talked to him or said his name or anything. And I know, not that I would put him on a list of references. He wasn't really at that level.
Yeah.
But because we were basically at the same level when I left that company.
Ah.
And so I wouldn't have used him as a reference anyway, but he's the kind of person that would have given me 100% a bad reference because we just did not get along.
Oh.
And again, I think it was more of a personality thing. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know how much you remember this, but one of the last projects I was on that company, which is probably one of the reasons why he started tanking me there and I got laid off first as that company started to go downhill,
yeah.
Or at least this branch did. The company's still in operation, but
yeah, knock on wood.
Yeah. Anyway, well, the Southern California branch is doing really well, and they've actually got some good people down there.
Really?
They've got a brand new director of cultural resources. Yeah.
Oh, really? Charles left?
Yeah, he went to another company. Yeah. And so anyway, I'm actually talking to him about Wild Note. Yeah. So anyway, we just this last thing, and this happens in CRM all the time. Me and this other guy that were working with him were salaried.
Yeah.
And we were the only ones out on this field project that were salaried. You were out there too.
Yeah.
And we were really behind on some of the stuff that needed to be done. And I think the budget for this project was really strange.
It was.
There wasn't a lot of money in it. And so he wanted us out there because he wanted to work us after everybody else went home. We would go back to the camp and grab something to eat, but then we went back to work.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
You remember that?
Yeah.
Well, we mentioned him and I, the other guy and I, we mentioned something to HR, and we basically put together what we wanted to say, and then I presented it to HR and said, listen, we were told not to report these hours.
Oh.
And that's against company policy.
Yeah.
And I think this guy that we worked for kind of got in trouble for that, but then he started tanking us after that. And he actually told me that he respected me and thought I was, you know, intelligent and a good field person and a good archaeologist before that. But after that incident, went downhill.
Is this the same person who also recruited people to volunteer?
Yes.
To work on your... Oh.
You know who I'm talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. So, hey, Christian LaRosa joined us. How's it going, Christian?
Yo.
So...
Ah...
Anyway, let's take another quick break for the archaeology show, so I can have a nice edit point here. So this is a quick break for the archaeology show, and we'll be right back. You may have heard my pitch for membership. It's a great idea and really helps out. However, you can also support us by picking up a fun t-shirt, sticker, or something from a large selection of items from our Tee Public store. Head over to arcpodnet.com/shop for a link. That's arcpodnet.com/shop to pick up some fun swag and support the show. Edit point, magic of editing. We're back live.
Oh, it's interesting. You also did a really good profile on that project, too, that wasn't completed. Because I had to digitize it.
Oh, the drawing?
Yeah, I had to digitize that.
That was the biggest profile I think I've ever done, profile drawing. Because what was that, like 12, like 3 or 4 meters wide?
That was like a huge trench and like a huge, like it's very difficult to describe without actually like saying what the site is and whatnot. Because I don't think we should necessarily talk about it. But wow, that would have been cool if you had the time to finish it. But supposedly you were just going to finish it in the office, weren't you?
Well, that was the idea because we didn't have any time left.
Yeah.
We were out. We were done.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they, it wasn't that, they didn't lay me off right then, but they also didn't give me any more time to finish it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just didn't get the chance. If I'd done that digitally rather than on paper, I would have had time in the field to finish it.
Or if you had just taken like, they had allowed you to take like, field photos.
We did have photos of it, didn't we?
Oh, we did.
We must have. Yeah.
Oh.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know.
Interesting. You couldn't have just taken time. I guess, well, whatever. I just always thought it was interesting when people would take time, like from budgets from other projects to go wash trucks or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, the way archaeology works.
I know. Boo. I know. Hey, before I forget, because I don't know, you know, our schedules are so wacky.
Yeah.
I don't know when we'll record next, but I'm going to Charlotte, North Carolina from December 23rd to January 1st.
Ah.
And I'm starting to put out on some social media stuff. Not much, though.
Yeah.
Not much yet. But to see if they want to have like an APN fan meetup and do some recording or just have a chat in Charlotte during that time.
Oh.
So I don't know if anybody's local over there. I know Christian's over in that area, but I think he's more down in Georgia, South Carolina. I don't think he's in North Carolina. I don't know. But anyway, it'd be really cool to meet up with people because I'm also going to be at the Society for Historical Archaeology meeting in Boston, second week of January.
Yeah.
So that's going to be really cool. And because I'm in the tech room with Wild Note, it's just Thursday and Friday, which means I've got all day Saturday to do stuff.
Interesting. You didn't bring your new drone?
Yeah, actually.
Oregon?
I did. And I think we're going to get clearance to fly the drone inside.
Ah.
Yeah, in the tech room.
Ooh.
So.
Did you get any footage in Oregon?
Oh, yeah. Got tons.
Yeah,
a bunch on the beach and got some cool footage of flying the DJI Mavic Mini over our trucks while we were driving on the beach. Because I was out there. My brother had his vehicle out there. My dad has his vehicle out there. And I got us all driving on the beach because there's a whole big section where you can drive on the beach there.
You know who does surprisingly good, integrating drone footage into his videos?
Who's that?
Casey Neistat.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I started watching his videos again, and, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I don't
He's such a douche, though.
Oh, well, that too. But also, you know, I don't necessarily care what he says in the video. It's really just like all the good ideas you get mm-hmm. For like filming, not just with the drone, but just in general.
Yeah.
Like some of his ideas are like, it's, you can see why he's always constantly employed.
Yeah.
Because he's a surprisingly good, you know, cinematographer slash editor.
Yeah.
You know, just like, it's like amazing. Like I was watching a video last night where normally, you know, instead of using the inbuilt transitions in his editor,
mm-hmm.
he was actually, you know, he was doing something that normally people would like edit out, which is tipping the tripod back.
Oh.
And, you know, and using the falling back motion as a transition between scenes, which I thought was a really good idea.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah. You know, it's like, wow, no wonder he gets to go to Switzerland to give, like, talks. Like, that's what the video is about. Like, he was in Switzerland or something. Or no, mm-hmm. that was the video before he was in Switzerland, like, showing off.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yay.
Nice, nice.
I want to do that, too.
Yeah, there's good stuff in his videos, but his attitude sometimes is really crazy.
Yeah.
So, this is a YouTuber.
Yeah.
Does, like, tech review videos and stuff like that.
Yeah, he's also gotten the electric bicycles. Although he's using the, was it, Super 73?
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Nice.
It looks like a... It's hard to describe. It looks like a moped,
mm-hmm.
but it's a, you know, bicycle.
Yeah, yeah.
Technically.
Cool.
Yeah.
Christian LaRosa says he lives in Atlanta. The Atlanta metropolitan area has an archaeology happy hour.
Does it?
Yeah, each month. So, Christian, does it move around each month or is it always at the same place? I'm curious about that.
Interesting. You'd always set one up here.
I know.
You know what else I was thinking?
Isn't there kind of one here? Don't you say that our... Like archaeologists meet at one of the, like that Irish pub or something like that every once in a while? Or is that a haphazard?
Oh, wait. Was it DRI is actually holding a talk Wednesday evening?
Well, not that, but I thought there was a happy hour thing. Also, Christian's saying I'd get in touch with the organizer and do something live with them, but I don't think I'll be going to Atlanta even from Charlotte.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of a jaunt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what else is interesting? I'd never thought about it until I was listening to an episode of the Jordan Harbinger show.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking, wow, I wonder, you know, he's talking about improving your networking / interviewing skills, and he was mentioning Toastmasters.
Oh, yeah?
So I looked it up. There's like a bunch of clubs here in Reno.
Yeah.
Like a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
Like the two I was looking at meet at 7 a.m., which is interesting.
That's a little early.
Sort of.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, it fits
especially
in.
For you. You go to bed at like 4 a.m.
I know. But, you know. But it's interesting. I don't even know what Toastmasters does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They teach you how to speak.
Do they?
Yeah, real quick. Christian says they move around each month. 3 hours long. Wow. Or 3 hour drive. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I had a girlfriend back in college that was in Toastmasters. And essentially, it is a, if you have to do a lot of public speaking or you're very nervous about public speaking, even if it's like giving a paper at a conference or something like that, you can join Toastmasters because what they do is they give presentations each time they meet, but I think they also give pointers and things like that. It's almost doing like doing a Audible, you know, book report kind of thing every time you meet. I don't think everybody does it every time, obviously. They don't have enough time for that.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they decide because I'm not a member of Toastmasters, but basically, it is an organization set up to make you a better public speaker.
Interesting.
Yeah. To make you more comfortable in front of speaking in front of an audience.
Interesting. You ever done anything like that?
Well, I don't really need to.
I'm
not uncomfortable speaking in front of an audience.
Ah.
I speak in front of lots of people all the time, you know? So from the podcast, which doesn't really count, I don't think, to doing... You know, big demos and stuff like that for companies, for the couple companies I'm working for. We do virtual. It's virtual, so I'm not actually standing in front of them most of the time.
Yeah.
But I've never really had a problem with that. I mean, every 2 weeks with my Civil Air Patrol squadron, I'm sitting in front of 40 people, you know, and giving a presentation every 2 weeks. I'm doing one tomorrow night.
Oh,
so,
yeah?
Yeah, our meetings are the second and fourth Monday of the month. So, it's something that I've always, I don't know about always, but for the long as I can remember, I've never felt that much discomfort doing that.
Yeah.
So...
before I forget, did you want to give a shout out to Current Archaeology?
Yeah, that's a good point. So the Archaeology Podcast Network turned 5 on December 1st.
Yeah.
That was when we decided to really launch multiple shows, basically.
Yeah.
And it was, oddly enough, during that 5-year project.
I
was on
that.
The long project I was on, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, Tristan, our co-founder, got a write-up in Current World Archaeology.
Oh, is it Current World Archaeology?
It's Current World Archaeology, yeah.
Oh.
So not a publication we see a lot over here in the United States.
No.
I think you can probably find it at Barnes & Noble or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they have a huge magazine rack.
That's true, too.
But It's bigger over in the rest of the world. And I think one of the reasons it might not be as big here is because we have Archaeology Magazine, the magazine of the Archaeology Institute of America.
Oh, and then there's the other one I used to, oh God, I always forget the name of it. Hmm. There was a better one that used to, was put out by the Archaeological Conservancy, I want to say.
Is that American Archaeology?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I always thought that was better.
It's more journalistic, I think.
Yeah.
In the fact that it's got more report style articles in it.
Yeah.
Fewer though. It's a smaller publication.
I always forget. Was it the AIA? I'm not sure how much you were paying attention to Twitter, but there was a thread about the current journal. One of the current journals from one of the big organizations. I don't know if it's the AIA or the SAA. It might be the SAA where they were talking. They were responding directly to some of those. We'll call them alternative archaeology sort of followers.
Yeah.
And they were doing and people were arguing, should you be doing this at all? Should you be responding? Because it's you're driving traffic to their, site and whatnot. And I read the whole, I read most of the articles and they were very interesting, but they're also the sort of things where you realize you're really only convincing other archaeologists because the language is so esoteric.
Yeah.
At least the ones we use. Because I've actually been watching, I've been watching some of the, there was a channel I was watching where they just took the name of a video game, Uncharted X.
Mm.
And it's just he was just presenting, his, idea that, that the Incans, could not have made all those walls because, the ability to make straight lines and chisel straight lines in the stone is beyond Incan, was beyond ancient Peruvian technology.
Dude, I just had a conversation with a guy in the Salt Lake City airport a few days ago. I ended up having a flight delayed, so I got a late dinner and a drink at this place in the Salt Lake City airport. I can't remember what it was called, but they make a really great, their version of an old-fashioned.
Ooh.
It was pretty tasty.
Yeah.
It was delicious. I've had it before. When I came from the conference in Idaho, I also had a layover in Salt Lake City, and my gate change was right at that little restaurant.
Yeah.
So that's when I first had that old fashioned. So I went back and sought it out because it was, again, just down from where my gate was.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was near the end of the night. They were closing up. It was almost 11 o'clock. And he saw the back of my computer, my other laptop that has all my APN stickers on it.
Yeah.
I think this one. No, this one does not. It has a few. But anyway, he was asking me about them. And we started talking about archaeology.
Yeah.
And then he's like, man, do you think that humans really built the pyramids? Because I heard that they were set up as conductors of electricity, but we can't figure out what they're supposed to power. I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, they're made out of rock, first off. And he's like, yeah, but isn't there something inside that the government is trying to hide? And I was like, really? Do you really think that? Do you really think somebody's trying to hide something inside the pyramids that we don't know about?
Oh, my God. That project that you and I were just talking about, the one where you couldn't complete the profile?
Yeah, yeah.
One of the archaeologists we worked with, her YouTube channel focus. She was talking. She flew to Egypt to do episodes of a show showing that the pyramids were really power generators.
It doesn't make any sense.
Of course not.
I mean, what would they be powering first off? And why? Okay, let's just assume. Let's just say in the last 9 minutes here that the pyramids were power generators. That they were generating some massive, I don't know what, right?
Yeah.
First off, two questions I have that follow on from that. A, what the hell were they trying to power that needed such big power generators, whatever that means? And I could see, let's even take it a little farther. Let's say it only generated power when the Nile flooded, and the Nile floods over by the pyramids, floods up in there, water comes in, basically a turbine kind of thing maybe.
Yeah.
And then the gold top that was theorized to be on top of the pyramids, the cap, maybe that went between the pyramids or something. I don't know. It's total bullshit, but let's just say that's true, right?
Yeah.
First, what are they powering? And why is there no evidence of that?
Yeah.
And second, why is there no increase in the rest of their technology? Why is there no evidence of other electrical power generation or electrical devices or things that you can create and do with electricity that are part of Egyptian culture? Egypt is almost as good as ancient Greece in the number of artifacts that we have.
Yeah.
They're just everywhere.
Well, the thing is, the Uncharted X, his thesis was that the Egyptians found all this stuff. The Egyptians, Bruins, the Incans found all this stuff and they repurposed it. And therefore, all the technology, they didn't understand the technology that all this stuff was powering. Therefore, they got rid of it.
Yeah, but it still doesn't matter. It's archaeology. Where's the rest of it?
Exactly.
If they found it, why can't we find evidence that these things existed?
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I feel like we deal in, like, tangible things you can hold. That's, like, the thing people don't understand. We're not historians. We don't just make up, like, we don't like, write histories.
Right.
We just find stuff and report what we found. And then we create, we can make suppositions about a society based on what we find.
Right, right.
Whereas they, a lot of these channels, a lot of these conspiracists, they start off with, like, a story, and then they try to make all the evidence, what evidence they can find fit, and then the rest of it we're just hiding.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Like you hand a child a crayon, what's the first thing they can draw? A straight line.
Sure.
And yet for somehow there has to be a precursor Egyptian, precursor Incan civilization that created all these giant blocks, because you know, if you get like 10,000 people, they can't like move these stones and they can't like create straight lines, which is stupid.
This kind of goes along with another thing too. And on the Archaeotech podcast, we talked to a gentleman that had done research into the Chacoan road network.
Oh yeah, that was the latest one, right?
Well, that was what?
That's the latest one, isn't
yeah,
it?
I think that was the last one, yeah. And anyway, so we talked to him, and he did this thing called least cost analysis to determine what is the most effective path to get from, like, Chaco Canyon and some of the pueblos there to the place where these roads were connecting.
Yeah.
And do those roads line up with that path?
Yeah.
And in a lot of cases, they did.
Ah.
They lined up really closely with these. And when I say roads, I don't mean, like, Native American trails that are all the place. I mean, these were... floored me. He said they were up to 10 meters wide. And it wasn't just from like foot traffic and stuff. It was like they were constructed, right? So
kind of like the Roman roads or the Incan roads.
Well, I guess, yeah. So anyway, the point is, I was thinking.
Yeah?
I was trying to think, like, we don't really understand their creative or industrial vision for what was going on back then. We don't have the common historical frame of reference, right?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing that goes with the pyramids. And this, like, let's say, how are people going to interpret, what is that famous architect that makes all the crazy big buildings?
Oh, Frank Gehry?
Frank Gehry, yeah. Well, I kept thinking Getty. I was like, that's not right. The Frank Gehry buildings, like, how are people going to interpret that later on? Like, is an archaeologist in 1,000 years going to go, let's do an analysis on whether or not this is the most efficient building type? Of course it's not.
No.
there is a vision there that is either part artistic, part functionality.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, we do all this analysis, like, let's say on the pyramids in particular. Sure, a pyramidal structure is probably one of the easiest ways to get something that tall and that heavy because it all kind of builds in on itself, right?
Yeah.
And you'll see that just naturally building stacking up a pile of sand.
Yeah.
It's going to naturally go into this pyramidal type of shape.
Yeah.
Because that's how it's called the angle of repose, actually. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah.
For dirt, all types of material.
Well, anyone who's ever seen a back dirt pile.
Yeah, they have an angle of repose where they're going to sit naturally at a certain angle, right? If you know the angle of repose is this, but it's sitting at this, you know it's going to collapse at some point, right? Because it can't maintain that, right? But it can maintain anything less than that. But what's the angle is the highest angle it can sit there without basically causing an avalanche. So anyway, it's interesting to me when we try to analyze these historical things based on our current biases based, you know, around what we think of as functional.
Yeah.
You know, and we can't take out the artistic vision either, you know, because these people were just as creative as we are, the Incans especially. I mean, look at what they did.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, think about it. You know, you're using your 1,000-year hypothesis.
Yeah.
What are they going to make of Jackson Pollock? Would a future archaeologist even recognize that as art? Or would they just, like, think of it as, like, you know, like background scatter?
Right.
And
Well, we have that now.
Yeah.
You know, we look at our art from 400 or 500 years ago, and those are sought-after pieces, and we recognize them as art.
Yeah.
But you start going back farther and farther and farther, or with cultures that we didn't have a lot of contact with that evolved in very different ways, like Native American culture here.
Yeah.
You look at rock art from 500 years ago, and we don't understand any of it.
No.
You know, I mean, some of it's relatively obvious that, oh, that looks like a fish or it looks like a thing. Yeah. But why were they doing that? You know, why were they making that? Was it artistic? Was it hunting magic? Was it, you know, all these other things that people think, these theories? Yeah. They're really just theories. There's no way we're going to know. But we have a hard time interpreting that because we don't have a common frame of reference.
I feel like a lot of these conspiracists, they say more about our current culture than they do about these past cultures.
Right.
Like, you know, the fact that so many of their theses is the fact that their whole supposition is that these cultures that supposedly archaeologists are so, you know, attributing these to, they're not advanced enough to do this stuff.
Right.
Like, says more about their view of the people, of those people, than it does about the stuff they did.
Right.
Because, like, oh, my God, just, like, it's interesting because, you know, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to mention it on air because, you know, I don't want anyone to steal my idea, but I do have an idea. I do have an idea for, like, a ongoing YouTube series. Problem mm-hmm. is it would be hard to organize, but hopefully we'll see. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because, like, there's a whole bunch of React channels on YouTube yeah. where people watch stuff and then they give their thoughts on it and they have an idea for a format because a lot of these channel, what they do is they actually play the video and then they show them reacting live. But I don't necessarily want to do that. I don't necessarily want to give, you know, I don't necessarily want to bring attention to them, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
I want to do it in a way that, like, you know, where we can discuss the video and people, if they want to look it up, they can look it up. But, you know, right. they'll have, like, our thoughts on it.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Hopefully. We'll see.
Well, in the last couple of minutes here,
yeah,
and I've transitioned to our outro screen.
Oh, I did that minutes
ago. Yeah, you can see on the Facebook side.
Yeah,
you can see how to get a hold of us. You've got Richie's YouTube channel on there.
Yeah,
we actually need to take off the ArcPodNet. You call this archaeology channel because I think I moved that.
Oh, you did?
Well, we're not putting anything on there anymore because we're not saving these. They're purely on Facebook and your YouTube channel.
Oh, all right.
So, and your website.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, we do have archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/shop where you can get a whole bunch of cool things.
Yeah.
Links over to our TeePublic store, which has a lot of sweet, you know, gifts and things like that on there.
Oh, interesting. Are you also selling the Dirt Podcast stuff?
No, they have their own store. They had it when they joined the APN.
Oh, because I was going to say they're surprisingly good.
Yeah, they've got a lot of cool stuff on there. And I don't want to take, because I've seen their designs and my first thought was, oh, I should get that over in our TeePublic store, but I don't want to take their current revenue stream away.
Yeah. It's also a very particular kind of humor.
Yeah, well.
Which which I really enjoy.
Exactly. Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah.
So let's see. Christian LaRosa put up, the GAA Archaeology Happy Hour. It's got a Facebook page.
Ooh.
So check that out in the stream, the comment stream for this Facebook, on Facebook here, if you want to see that. So anyway, I think that's all we have. It's all we have time for. I got to get home and edit more podcasts.
Yeah, and I've got to start editing stuff.
Yeah.
And start organizing. That's like, I didn't even realize I had so many videos in production until started doing an inventory.
Yeah, well, I would say one quick ask here for those people that are still listening.
Yeah.
You know, share this out if you thought you saw any valuable material in here. I just want to share it out so people can come over to the APN, like the page.
Yeah.
Come over to Richie's YouTube channel, like that page.
Yeah, happyarchaeologyfuntime.com.
Yeah, so you can see when we go live again, because the whole point of this particular show is engagement.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll just ramble on about stuff if nobody has anything to say.
True. It's also interesting, you know, like I feel like, you know, we've had more viewers in the past two live streams than we've had in like ever. Am I wrong?
Well, no, I think you're right. Yeah. So, and that's the other nice thing about the show is we enjoy doing it. So we'll do it even if nobody's listening.
Yeah.
Which we have. Because it'll still be on YouTube. It'll still be on Facebook. If somebody wants to go back and learn something from it, then that's great. But I think the point of this live stream is to engage with you guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't want to just be talking heads. Although, like I said, We can ramble on for as long as we need to.
Yeah, that's true too.
Yeah. Whew. So anyway, thanks for listening. Again, arcpodnet.com and
Happy Archaeology Fun Time and happyarchaeologyfuntime.com.
There you go. And we will be back maybe even a week. I'm here next weekend. So
same here.
Maybe we'll record next Sunday at probably the same time, 3:30 to 4 o'clock Pacific time is probably a good time. So
And hello, Evan. Thanks for the show, boys, on a survey in Mississippi.
Nice.
Wow,
nice.
Is there ever a time of the year where there are no ticks in Mississippi and the southeast and the south?
You know, in the south, they definitely fell off quite severely when it got colder out. When I worked in the Carolinas.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think they ever go away 100%.
Gross.
But, yeah.
That's well, all I said.
On that awesome note, we'll see you guys next time.
Yeah, we'll see you.
Thanks for listening to the Archaeology Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. You can provide feedback using the contact button on the right side of the website at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/archaeology. Or you can email Chris at archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Please like and share the show wherever you saw it so more people can have a chance to listen and learn. Send us show suggestions and follow ArcPodNet on Twitter and Instagram. This show is produced by the Archaeology Podcast Network. Opinions are solely those of the hosts and guests of the show. However, the APN stands by their hosts. Special thanks to the band Sea Hero for letting us use their song, I Wish You'd Look. Check out their albums on Bandcamp at seahero.bandcamp.com. Check out our next episode in 2 weeks. And in the meantime, keep learning, keep discovering new things, and keep listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network. Have an awesome day. This show is produced and recorded by the Archaeology Podcast Network, Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle, in Reno, Nevada, at the Reno Collective.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
Wow, that went a lot better than normal.
Thanks again for listening to this episode and for supporting the Archaeology Podcast Network. If you want these shows to keep going, consider becoming a member for just $7.99 US dollars a month. That's cheaper than a venti quad eggnog latte. Go to archpodnet.com/members for more info.